to be frank, every radio station needs a shock drop. If you were running a radio station, and it is a public company, you're never going to have a quiet life. I think the industry is missing a great deal.
Conversations, an occasional radio moment series in which you hear from those who made a difference. Colin Mason.
I was a fairly normal child, I think. I grew up in Newport, went to school, of course. Pretty average, I guess. Not sports mad. I've always had a fascination for history. Yeah, but I was a fairly normal guy, happy-go-lucky. We had lots of friends, of course. So, that's how life was in Newport, in Mumbleshire, in those days. I really wasn't a performer, but I was an outward-going child. I always fought my corner. I could pronounce and talk on things, but I wasn't, if you like, a singer. I wouldn't recite on the stage or anything like that. That came a bit later. I did begin to, in my teen years, do a little bit more performing, as it were, usually playing records. But I did it, that was the thing. I was always attracted to the army for a start, but I really didn't see that as a career. Yeah, even in those days, I was fascinated by broadcasting, and I was radio and television. I guess I was more or less looking to that line, radio or TV, it just depended what my mood at the moment was. But of course, in my day, we didn't have any commercial radio. What we did have was commercial television, and we had a couple of TV stations in South Wales, WWN, TWW, Television Wales in the West, and of course, Harlech TV. So I guess I was a bit more oriented towards TV than radio.
This is Harlech, which provides your independent television programmes, broadcasting on the transmitters of the Independent Television Authority.
But I was always keen on radio, I don't know why. I did have a very heavy mobile with an aerial in the lid, and if I tuned the radio with the aerial close to the, in the house ring main, if you have mains power, it seems to make the whole mobile radio much more sensitive. And I could get some extraordinary radio stations from pretty well North America, from North Africa and so on. And that fascinated me, and I think that really sparked me into the radio game. On medium wave, in the days before all those German stations began pumping out their music 24 hours a day, so we're talking about the early 60s, I guess. In those days, you could just pick up little stations from the United States. One in particular I remember, WKBW. Buffalo, New York.
Thank you, Jim Taylor, and hi to you, everybody, aboard the Shannon Show. From now until 9 o'clock this evening, we'll get things underway with Curtis Lee. Pretty Little Angel Eyes, that should do the trick. Arizona's real hot, man. Pretty Little
Angel Eyes. And I could actually listen through my little heavyweight mobile to this radio station. It was amazing. They were playing commercials for drag racing in Buffalo, New York. Well, that sounds pretty exciting and pretty good. For years, I was able to do that. It could just get, it was very, very faint. It would come in after 8 o'clock at night time. And I just love listening to that.
Curtis Lee, Pretty Little Angel Eyes. 4 minutes now after the hour of 6, WKBW is good time. Sultry is our weather word here.
We would listen to the light program in the evenings, then a bit of Luxembourg. Though I then became a dab hand with the radiogram and the shortwave radio there, that if Luxembourg went weirdo, I could tune in on its shortwave frequency. Even at about 10 or 11, I was able to be able to do that. So that showed a capability, I suppose. And the trouble is, with the old, good old BBC, it was a bit staid and old-fashioned, you know. So you'd make any attempt to get away. And by the way, also tuning around in the same way on the radio, you could get a lot of interesting stations out of North Africa, out of a place called Tangier. After the war, it was an international territory. So all sorts of little radio stations were there. But it would be in French. Understand a little bit of schoolboy French to tell when ordinary programming was on and when commercials were on. School, primary school, secondary school, grammar school. Thereafter, of course, you go on to university. That was the expected routine in my house, so I would never break out of that mould. It was the University of Wales, and I read history. I am a historian. I do see that as my academic background is history. I managed to do a bit of that all through my life.
I'd like Right now, 32 in the 550 this week. The fab record by Billy Fury called In Thoughts of You. I love it. Sing the song.
In Thoughts of You.
I did. I was on the local newspaper, university newspaper. I suggested, look, most of the students are listening to this Radio Caroline North. Why not do a story on it? He said, yeah, fine, but you haven't got any money, so, how are you going to get... So I had a hitchhike there. Hitchhike, I had to pay for the ticket from Liverpool to Ramsey Isle of Man on a ferry. And I did actually get on board this ship. A friendly fisherman took me out of the boat. They welcomed me on board. It was a guy called Alan Turner, I think his name was. Anyway, he gave me the big tour of Radio Caroline, sat in the big seat, took lots of pictures with the ship's bell, the Caroline ship's bell. And I think the presenters, generally speaking, lived in a world of semi-chaos. Combination wasn't that good, the food wasn't that good, but it was a radio station. And that was extraordinary, and it was broadcasting to the north of England. So, yeah, it was certainly worth a visit. I got an honours degree, and that I used to get to America, to Texas, Houston, Texas, and to a university called Rice University. By the time I was 16, I was determined I was going to go to America. It had all the excitement that I could ever want. Certainly, people of my age group, whereas Australia and New Zealand, places like that, attract students to travel, for me, it was America. It could only be America. The move to America is really more about radio than it was about academia.
I don't have plans and schemes.
The only way I can describe it, really, I don't think I've ever seen that film, American Graffiti.
You just can't stay 17 forever. You've got to get that through your head.
It captures sort of teen life, people 18, 19, 20, that sort of thing. And I remember being amazed, wandering around America with friends, that they did live this life, you know, with the standard hamburger place. And there they would buy Coca-Cola and burgers and so on. But they'd be listening to the radio and all that. And there, of course, I was really able to indulge my interest in radio, to listen to all those fantastic radio stations that they have in the States. And the radio station would always be the popular music station of the area. At late night, there was a great character in American radio called Wolfman Jack.
I say we got to hang on, baby. We got to hang on to what we got. That's the Four Seasons. The only precious thing we got are our good friends. You know what I mean? Yeah.
He didn't broadcast on normal stations. He broadcast some stations in Mexico. And you can hear that pretty well all over North America. People like to listen to him, as well as listen to the local stations in Houston, of course. KILT, KNUZ, KRBE. These are all great stations. I did want to break into broadcasting. So what happened in Houston was I got quite friendly to one station there called KILT. It was owned by a guy called Gordon McClendon. I'm now just a little pasty-faced student who wants to be a broadcaster, and I go along, hang around the stage door, as it were. Eventually, I became useful. You know, I'd clean carts, erase carts, Gates carts, manufactured by Gates. But they were a cartridge, a tape-loaded cartridge. You load it into the machine, you can record stuff on it, and if you wanted to replay it, you push a button rather than having to lace up a tape. Actually, it reminded me of an interview that I had at BBC Radio Durham. That would have been about 68, I think. Ken Brown was the station manager, and he was fascinated by these cart machines, and he wanted me to tell him about it. But he was always very proud of the... He said, well, we've now got a cart system here. It's called the Roller Plessy Cassette Machine. I said, that's a mouthful. Of course, they were only single slots. You could only play in one cart. On the bigger American systems, you could ram in two or three carts and file them off one after the other. That was quite a system.
KILT proudly presents Houston's Community Bulletin Board.
I mean, it's a big metropolitan top 40 radio station. And Gordon McClendon was a very clever guy. He had two such stations, one in Houston and one in Dallas. And by the way, I'm now cleaning carts at KLT. And a girl who worked at the radio station said, hey, that tape you're working now, that Ampex tape you got there, that's just come off a ship. I said, oh, really? Where's that? That's in Galveston. It was an old pirate ship called the Mi Amigo. It had been used by a radio station called Radio Nord out of Sweden, I think. But it was partly owned by this guy, Gordon McClendon, in Texas. When they were taken off the air in Norway or in Sweden, he had to get the ship out of the area, so it went over to Galveston. It was then bought by Alan Crawford, I think, to become one of the two Radio Caroline ships. The other thing that I got to know at this radio station was all the big American metropolitan radio stations had feeder stations further out in the state. And they would lean on the program directors of these radio stations to provide them with talent when they needed it. So that's why they always kept their radio talent well honed up and always somebody in the wings ready to take over. And they said, you should go to a little place called Nacogdoches, which is in East Texas. It's an old cowboy town. There's a radio station there called KEEE, Key Radio. And so it's run by the program director there is a guy called Mike Selden. So I did that. By this time, my wife, Angela, she was then my girlfriend, she managed to get an identical graduate fellowship at Rice University. So she arrived in Houston. By the way, in America, you've got to have wheels. If you don't have wheels, you're dead. And now I'd love to have bought a Ford Mustang. But it was way out of my price range, so I wasn't going to pay for that. But I ended up buying a little Renault Dauphine. My then-girlfriend, Angela, and I jumped in the car and went up to Nacogdoches to see this radio station. Anyway, it was very good. We arrived in Nacogdoches. The radio station was above a bank called the Stone Fort Bank. Part of the car, and I went in, and I was immediately put straight on air. No nonsense. Sit down there, and he asked me, you know, as an Englishman, what the hell was I doing in Texas? I said, well, this morning I drove up from Houston, but it was raining. Had to wind the window up on my car. And with this, he started laughing, and everybody started laughing. And so what the heck have I said? You know, I wind up the window. You wind them down, you wind them up. He says, we don't say that over here. We roll up the windows, and we usually push a button. Anyway, ha-ha. But he got me the job. So that's really how I got my experience.
At 6 minutes past 7 o'clock, that's Miss Petula Clark. Don't sleep in the subway. It's dark and dank down there. Pet Clark, an English girl, married to a Frenchman, now living...
Here I was in a small town in America, on the radio, doing every show under the sun. It was a small town, top 40 radio station. This local radio station, commercial, it had an hour-long news magazine program at midday. Everybody was very earnest about the job they were working. It was owned by a guy who was very passionate about the community, and the radio station reflected the community. The newsreader was a guy called John Edwin Frederick. We called him Jeff. And John Edwin Frederick would read the news. He would also read the obituaries. Now, they do this a lot in the Caribbean, where communications aren't particularly strong. The way you find whether people are still alive or dead is by listening to the obituaries on the radio station. I was always amused by it because when he finished broadcasting, he probably put on more his other suit and went and collected the bodies. He would have probably been already involved with the undertaking business. But it just showed you the level of information and news that was available on these stations. It impressed me.
Wait, that's on position number 9 on the sing-along survey for this week. Stand by for a classic next on the Mason Show.
I guess I was with on and off because of the university terms and so on. I guess I was there for about 2 years. Eventually, my wife and I decided that we should get married. And of course, the whole family is in the UK. So we realised we couldn't get married in the States. There would have been a revolution, so we undertook to come back to England. By this time, by the way, I picked up a dog. I'd adopted a dog. His name was Wiggles. Well, when he was excited, he was always wiggling his backside and so on. Well, anyway, he had a fly back Pan American, met by my parents, who had to put him into quarantine, you know. Meanwhile, Angela and I came back by ship, Hamburg America line, on the Rendsburg. Took us from New Orleans to Le Havre. That would have been late 67, early 68. So then I'm back in the UK now. The first thing I did was I went for an audition with Ulster Television. I thought, well, listen, I've got to get a respectable job because we're going to get a mortgage to get a house. In those days, if you were a freelance broadcaster or a contract broadcaster, there was very little chance of you getting a mortgage. So I applied to the BBC, applied to Ulster Television, of course, as well. I went for an audition in Broad Street in Birmingham. It was for regional television news, straightforward reporting, sound. They're charming. I think they recognised that I could do the job, but they were a bit worried about my American accent. I picked up, needless to say, after 2 years in America, I picked up a slight American accent when broadcasting. They were happy to wear with that in Radio 4 or World Service, but they weren't too happy about me being envisioned with an American accent. That was me in the BBC at Birmingham. I suppose, there for a few weeks, and I did several stories. But then I had a call from Ulster Television to go over there for an audition. What a difference the BBC and ITV can be. I arrive in Belfast, have the audition, and they were absolutely thrilled by my slight American accent. So I got the job as a continuity announcer with Ulster Television, which I kept for a year until I was married for sure. I couldn't stay there because I'm now a married man, I have a home, I had a mortgage, and I had to have a respectable company, like the BBC. I now apply to BBC Local Radio. One call in particular at Durham.
Radio Durham, 96.8. Soundsational.
Ken Brown was the station manager. There was another guy called John Craven, who is now on Countryfile. He was leaving radio and wanted to go to TV. So there was a slot at Radio Durham, if I could get it. They could tell that I knew about radio and I could do it. In fact, I had a slight American accent. It was neither here nor there. But I did get the job at Radio Durham. He said, do you play cricket? I said, no. Certainly not cricket, no. Football? No, I'm not a footballer. He said, well, what about rugby? You're from the rugby part of the world down there in Monmouthshire. I did play a couple of games at school and at university. He said, oh, right, that's good. You're going to be the sports producer. Wow. OK, I hadn't intended that. Sports producer. I did a number of easy listening programmes on the radio. I did the Daily Durham, which is the breakfast programme. We all did it in turns, by the way. The experience of being in the BBC really equips you for the world of broadcasting. You are trained. You really feel that you've been given the blue chip training. Durham was a standard BBC local radio station. I can't say it'd be any different to any other station around the country. They're very, very friendly, super people. Beautiful part of the country, by the way. So I was living in Sunderland in those days. Kate Adie was from Sunderland. She was home anyway. Every BBC local radio station has a couple of pop music enthusiasts. I guess I was the one in Durham. But another one in Durham was Chris Reardon. Another one was Graham Wynne. They were all closet pirate DJs, really.
Broadcasting to County Durham 20 and a half hours every day. This is Radio Durham. News, views and music from and for County Durham on 94.5 VHF and Rediffusion, Radio Durham.
So, of course, like Radio Durham, you had other people like Kate Adie, who was an ace journalist. Kate Adie and I would share the Daily Durham between us. So I would do the breakfast show one day, she would do it the next.
We opened the radio station with a pigeon race.
I remember she came downstairs from the studio and I could see that she was a bit worked up. And she said, I'm going to find out who the heck is banning all these records at the BBC. Apparently she wanted to play a particular track, Je T'aime, but she couldn't get it. Why? Because the BBC had banned it. So I want to find out who is banning these records at the BBC. So then she then picked up the phone and then called London, of course, talked to Graham Library. She was greatly suspicious that the people who were doing these bannings, and she had a conversation with people who controlled the music at the Graham Library. At the end, you could tell she was coming to the end of this thing, but she dangled the phone up so we could all listen. And the lady in blue check at Graham Library said, well, So there you are, see, my dears. We don't ban records here in the BBC. We simply don't play them. I felt I wanted to get back to my own neck of the woods. That's the Bristol Channel, the River Severn, all that kind of area. And we saw there was going to be another radio station, another local radio station in Bristol. Three of us transferred from Durham to Radio Bristol in 1968. And the station manager there was a guy called David Wayne. Great guy, but he was a classic BBC station manager. Very capable. And he was a great leader, by the way, certainly galvanised the radio station. David, as a station manager, had to be careful. He knew what the BBC wanted by way of a BBC local radio station. However, he himself was a popularist. He understood the power of popular music to gain audience. And he was the guy who, when Kenny Everett was fired by the BBC Radio 1, remember there was a problem with a political minister of some comment that was made.
She'd been driving more than 30 years, but says she was spurred on to take the test by her husband's appointment.
Jenny passed because she crammed a fibre in his hand. I know these people.
He went up to see Kenny Everett. He could have a show on Radio Bristol on Saturday mornings. He said, well, the money won't be the same, but on the other hand, you'll be getting one over Big Radio 1, you know, giving them a sock in the mouth, as it were.
Radio Bristol. With the jolliest DJs who play all the latest records for you and me on Radio Bristol.
Another station manager is a guy called Bob Gunnell, who's running famous radio station BBC Radio Brighton. And he was a bit miffed by this because Kenny Everett lived in North Sussex, which is very much part of Radio Brighton's area. He says, well, we can't have the Kenny Everett show on Radio Bristol. He needs to be on Radio Brighton. The end of it result was that programme was broadcast also on Radio Brighton. So you see, these station managers, faced with a popular music guy who's good and is capable and is professional, they need that talent. They need the audience build.
But our transmitter is some way from the city, high up on the Mendips in Somerset.
The powerful medium was medium wave, wasn't it? Was AM radio. On FM, you got, I suppose, the ABC One type people lived in a posh part of town. Now, David Wayne, by the way, as I say, was a very great popularizer. And I'd started a new program in Durham called Take It Away. And this is for people who wanted to buy or sell things. But of course, this is the BBC, so you can't mention money. However, you can describe the product, how old it is, and so anyway, I did that for Radio Durham, and David wanted me to do it at Radio Bristol. And I did, for a couple of years, to Take It Away on Radio Bristol, which is a buying and selling programme, really, but not mentioning cash. It was quite an art to do, and so you were on the straight and narrow all the time.
The opening today of the London Broadcasting Company's station marks a new departure in British broadcasting. It's the first station of the Independent Broadcasting Authority's local radio service.
By this time, commercial radio had got going. There was about six stations on the air, I think. The Independent Broadcasting Authority, they published the licences of for would-be commercial radio stations. They were quite authoritarian. I could get on well with them. They were OK. They were speaking my language, which was commercial radio. So I then had to find a way of exiting gently and going to a commercial radio station. The one I set my sights on, simply because I had a personal connection in that my wife was from Swansea, and there was going to be a station for the Swansea area. So I was watching this being built, could see that it was now taking shape. So I applied for the job of programme director. Delighted to say I got it. So there's Wynne, head of Welsh programmes, bilingual station, by the way. There's a Welsh-speaking population in that area, as well as English. English was the main language, and I was the overall programme controller. But this is my first venture into commercial radio in the United Kingdom.
Borida, good morning. It's 6 o'clock on Monday, the 30th of September, 1974. My name is Charles Braham, and as managing director, I am proud to say for the very first time that this is Swansea Sound on 257 metres, 95.1, VHF, FM, bringing independent radio to Wales.
We had to be very careful in designing those programmes. A, I wanted the station to be really hot in the American sense, hot little radio station in Nacogdoches, it wasn't going to take any prisoners. So we were going to be good in presenting top 40 radio. So we had a mixed programming bag, but daytime, of course, we were very much a top 40 radio station. And Phil Fothergill was my main producer to look after the presenters, because he was another popularizer at Radio Brighton. And I knew he knew how to do it. And I think the public did take to us in a very big way. By the way, before the station went on air, I'd gone into the odd local pub and just to pose a question, will you be listening or what are you expecting to hear at Swansea Sound? I remember a very common response was, oh, yes, oh, well, yeah, listen, mate, it's going to be all choirs and harps. That's what it's going to be. Well, of course, I was determined that it wasn't going to be that. We were a very hot sound.
We put out popular music, but that is a term which is fairly wide-ranging and can range from stuff which is in Top of the Pops to Andy Williams or even Frank Sinatra, for that matter.
By the way, tremendous audience figures. In that first year alone, 64% Jikra, which was unheard of. Now, I don't think any other station got such numbers. By the way, we were always looking for ways of inserting news, Welsh language, into the daytime. So we would have two weather forecasts, for instance. 2020 news. Well established in the States, main news on the hour, headlines on the half hour, headlines at 22. The one on the half hour would be in Welsh. After 7 o'clock at night time, there were really very long programmes which were in Welsh.
This is David Thomas with 2020 News. Chancellor Dennis Healey has named the day for his first aid for industry budget.
My logo, if you like, this label in the studio, a sign, a notice will say, this is showbiz, be an entertainer. Every station I've run, I've had that notice, pinched it from Key Radio in Nacogdoches. But it worked. It really did motivate people. They see that sign, they look into the window, and they would attempt to be an entertainer. And that's what it's all about. It's showbiz. You can say things in a boring, miserable way, or you can jazz it up, say the same things in a kind of popular and showbiz way. It's Swansea Sound. To be frank, every radio station needs a shock jock. Most of the presenters will be pretty straightforward, but every now and again, you do get a shock jock. And I give you an example by what I call that. Paul McKenna is a shock jock. He's very dramatic in the way he says things, and he makes people sit back and on their ears. We had another one in Swansea Sound called Paul Holmes. He was a New Zealander. I took him with me to Chiltern Radio, and then he went back to New Zealand. When he retired, they gave him a knighthood. This is New Zealand, of course, and knighthoods are there.
Very good. I listen to it in the morning, 6 o'clock, and then I come out to work at 7 then. But I like the Welsh, the 5 minutes Welsh sermon we have, you know, at 6 o'clock.
I never listen to Radio 1 anymore.
So Swansea Sound was a make-or-break thing, and it worked. I'm the programme controller, so I'm introducing ideas which may or may not work, but I needed to capitalize on that. I needed to move up a rung. So I figured working for Bob Kennedy, I would get an overview of the whole industry, the whole of ILR, get my own training absolutely honed up. And so if I'm launching another station, then I've got some friends that can help me do that investment and so on. For some reason, I had a reputation for knowing a bit about twin station operations, two stations, twin stations. I've written a paper, I think, for the local radio association. I was looking now for maybe a twin station to operate. And so I wrote to the authority and said, what twin stations are coming up for advertising? Of all the ones I received, the one I liked most of all was the east of England, Luton Bedford. A, that was the biggest population centre bar none anywhere in the east of England. So we had the largest population. Secondly, the countryside is just unbelievable. So it's gorgeous. So in terms of a family sense of moving to this area, it was great. So we applied for the licence in Luton Bedford.
Chiltern Radio serving Bedfordshire, Hertfordshire and Buckinghamshire. We broadcast on 362 metres medium wave, that's 8-8 kilohertz, and in stereo on 97.5 megahertz VHF.
So when you get the applications from the IBA or the Radio Authority or wherever these authorities are, they change from time to time, they send it out. And, of course, it's just a map and some words. It's up to you to design the radio station that is going to operate. Remember, it has to win an audience. It has to sell advertising. And so it's got to work. To be honest, I drove around the area, having got the application document, I drove around the area, and it was just brilliant. Chiltern Hills itself, the ordinary countryside around. I think that the Chilterns, Chiltern Radio, covers an area where it's full of Londoners who don't want to live in London. All you need to know, Chiltern Radio. They like being out in the country. They like the lifestyle. And we decided we would try and reflect that in our programmes. And if you listen to our jingle package, we talk about going down country lanes and byways and so on. So it has been that way. Gorgeous radio station to run, and I think the audience took to us and they gave us great loyalty. For me, when I heard the name Chiltern Radio, I said, that's it. That has got it. That sums up the whole area where we're living, the countryside, the place, the land that we enjoy for leisure and so on. That's it. It's just Chiltern Radio. And it projects a fabulous image, greatly distraught now that our old station is not operating still, but there we are. Times move on. The reason why it became a twin station was that they couldn't get proper signal coverage on FM or medium wave out of the southern transmitter. So you have a medium wave and an FM transmitter in Bedford as well as Dunstable. It complicates your life because you feel that you want to make the most of having two stations. You wouldn't necessarily have two breakfast programmes. Probably you want to have two mid-morning programmes or what have you. This issue is about programming. It's very important. And we spend lots and lots of management time talking about programmes, what we're going to do in that area, what we're going to do in this area, what presenters you've got. And by the way, it's complicated. You have lines going in one direction, lines going in the other, and programme feeds going there, and so on. It's tough enough with two stations, Luton and Bedford. Studios in Bedford with the old police headquarters, so plenty of room there. And the one in Dunstable, we didn't go to Luton, we went to Dunstable, the neighbouring town. There was a primary school, Chiltern Road Primary School, Chiltern Road, Dunstable. I said, the gods are with us. By the way, the property was about 5,000 square feet, just perfect for a radio station.
The Beach Boys and I Can Hear Music, the first record ever played right here on Chiltern Radio. Good morning, it's 7 minutes past six. I'm Paul Holmes.
And welcome. I'm Tony Newman. Good morning.
And there is a good morning. You didn't get lost this morning?
No, I didn't, actually. I just down the road.
It's a bit of a grand morning, isn't it, really? All the governors in here. You notice us all dressed up and everything.
I know. I had to put my best bib and tucker this morning.
I know. I couldn't find my checkbook.
It's been the early 80s. There was a lot of competition. We were overlaid by all the London stations coming out of London. So we didn't have it all our own way, but we made the most of loving, and they love us, the countryside and the people who live in it. Everybody got on well. Our board, by the way, was marvellous. They were very generous. If anybody needed something, simply had to ask and it would happen. That was the result of my chairman, by the way. My chairman, a guy called Peter Burton, it was he which really set the stamp on this radio station. I think people respected him. People saw that he was a fair play. You could talk to him. So he built then the board from that, and the board reflected that feeling. So it was good, and it worked very well with our staff and with our audience.
We can hear about each other rather than about events in London that many of us relate to little or not at all. And by hearing about each other, I hope we shall learn about each other, experience increasing enjoyment of the region in which we live, and develop a much greater sense of our own identity.
By the way, we had no expectation, by the way, that this station was going to become a network. You know, we had no expectation we were going to rise to about 15 stations, I think, in the end. We were happy to run the radio station as it is. We were happy to play the radio authority's game. You run the radio stations well, you get the people, you here's the advertising, you operate as a successful company. So we were happy to play that game. There was another two-station operation in the east of England. It was called Hereward Radio. It operated in Peterborough, and they got another station in Northampton.
These transmissions are in preparation for the new independent local radio service for Northamptonshire and Milton Keynes, which will be provided by the IBA's contractor, Hellawood Radio.
After a year or so, it began to look as if there was a problem with Northampton, and the station, for some reason, wasn't operating right. And oddly, and I still don't understand this to this day, but if you dealt with the company, they were happy to hand it back to the radio authority rather than sell it or whatever. Anyway, we then found ourselves negotiating with the radio authority to take over Hereward Radio Northampton. And that worked out all right. But, of course, how are we going to deal with this as a network? How are we going to deal with this to send programmes there and whatever? Well, one of my key men was a guy called Stuart Reed, who was the financial director. And we were sitting around saying, how are we going to bring in Northants Radio? We decided to call it Northants Radio, by the way. But Stuart said, well, look, forget about that. Just call it Chilton. So you've got the two Chilton radio stations. You're going to have another Chilton in Northampton. I said, well, remember, we're taking over a radio station. We're taking over people who work there and the audience. I don't think they would like it if they're now known as Chilton. And we need to be careful because we want to bring the people with us. So I was quite determined that we should have a separate name for Northampton. In any case, Northampton is not in the Chilterns. So Northampton was the first of our network stations, if you like. So it was designed and built on exactly the same model as Chilton, same local involvement, the same management, people taken from the radio station to be made station manager and so on.
Hello, welcome to the new, lively, brighter sound of Northants 96, coming to you from the heart of Northamptonshire, providing you with a new radio service that you can really enjoy.
I like listening to local news, as long as it doesn't get too boring. There's local travel to find out what's going on and how the motorway is.
I love local radio.
We might want to do a programme for all the stations in the network. What would you call it? You couldn't call it Chilton, you couldn't call it Northants Radio. The answer was with Paul McKenna, because he was doing a programme for us. And whenever he was doing the two stations, North and South, and Northlands Radio eventually, he would never refer to the station, but he would call it the Hot FM. This is Paul McKenna on the Hot FM. I said, yeah, that's it. That's the name. That is the network name, the Hot FM. After that, you can have an ordinary name for the radio station, a name which reflects the area, the people who live in it, the spirit of the area.
Hot FM, first thing in the morning, and McKenna with you here.
Back-to-back hits on the Hot FM.
So, Northants 96 was a station with a very good crew. Most of them stayed with us. It was the Chilton Radio Network, two Chilton stations, and Northants Radio. But soon there's going to be another one, because they then advertise a station for Milton Keynes. Now, Milton Keynes is a very important place here. Why? Because it's very large, huge population, and most of our current listeners for Chilton, I guess, and Northants Radio, probably were living in Milton Keynes. So it was very important for us to make certain that we did win Milton Keynes. That there was, in Milton Keynes, a cable company providing a cable local radio station, Community Radio Milton Keynes. And we'd got quite friendly with these guys. And we said, well, look, I tell you what, the station we have in mind in Milton Keynes is going to be very close to the railway station. It's got room. We can give you a studio space. We can give you admin space and other facilities, you know. And they say, yeah, we'll come and join you. So Horizon Radio was, in fact, incorporating another community radio station. So that was a successful partnership. We did win it. We decided to call it, another nice name, Horizon Radio. If you live in Milton Keynes, drive from the south, you come over a little range of hills, and an amazing vista opens out in front of you, and it's all the development of Milton Keynes, left to right. And I said, that's the name. We're going to call it Horizon Radio.
Good morning, I'm Chris Pearson. It's just after 10 o'clock on Sunday the 15th of October 1989. You're listening to Radio History in the Making. At last, Milton Keynes and Buckinghamshire have their very own radio station. Horizon Radio 103.3 FM. Welcome to the bright new sound of music radio. Music radio for the 90s with Stevie Wonder, Uptight.
By the way, the interesting thing about Horizon Radio was we decided that we would make it a stand-up studio. Now, this is very common in America. In American radio stations, you might be allowed to sit down, but generally speaking, you're encouraged to stay on your feet. They give you a tall stool, and the desk is higher, and the idea is, if you're walking around, you're lively, your diaphragm is properly expanded, you talk better, and you no longer have a seat glued to your backside, and you're lugging that around the studio. So the idea of a stand-up studio is a good one. We had that at Horizon Radio. I think it was very popular. So that was a stand-up station. You know, the presenters that we had were all energetic guys. We did want energy. We want brightness. Paul McKenna was just a brilliant presenter, comedian, hypnotist, you name it. I mean, I remember on one occasion, he decided for an April Fool joke that they'd invented a snowmaking machine. And he was promoting this on the radio, that on that day, we were going to cover it, we were live outside broadcast, going to have snow everywhere in Milton Keynes on that day. So the build-up of that was fantastic, and everybody knew it couldn't possibly be, of course. But however they turned up on the day, it was just great. Everybody looking for the snow, which never came.
Actually, tomorrow, I mean, I don't know if I suppose, yeah, I can tell you about it. I mean, you may have seen the press releases around, but the snowball experiment at Willin Lake is quite fascinating to me because what they're hoping to do is to create, like, a Christmas-time atmosphere so you can go skiing and that, sledging.
After Horizon Radio, we then got involved with another station, really quite local to Chiltern South, because, of course, part of our audience was in Hertfordshire. But Hertfordshire didn't have a very good signal there because all the London stations were swamping the area with signal. So the radio authority decided that they were going to have another infill station in St Albans and Watford. So we applied for that, and we eventually won it. I think there are other people going for it, but we won. So we now have a radio station on the edge of Chiltern. We called it Oasis Radio. Why? Because it was an oasis in a sea of sounds coming from London, which are not altogether good stuff and so on. And it was an oasis of good talk and good music. And we were alive, just as all children's stations were.
Oasis Radio.
The promotion of that station was fantastic. It was in the hands of Penny Holton, who was a brilliant PR and all that sort of stuff. We were very important in the radio station. We had then one more exercise, which was in Bristol. And there was a radio station called FTP, For the People. It was a station with a very strong black ethos.
These transmissions are in preparation for the new independent local radio service for the Bristol area, which will be provided by FTP.
But they'd run out of money. They'd run out of money. So we stepped in and we took them over. And we eventually decided to change the name from FTP to Galaxy Radio. We're going to call it Galaxy. Well, it's just a great name, isn't it? It's like Dairy Milk Chocolate, really. Galaxy. It's got an X in it. It's got a great name. It's a showbiz name, Galaxy. And so we thought we had to have that. It was on 97.1, I think, in Bristol. It wasn't a heavy black sound. It was more like Horizon Radio. So that it was a hotter mix format. Then eventually, of course, the Radio Authority advertised a regional station for the West Country and for South Wales. Transmitters on the Mendip transmitter. So it was going to be a big coverage. It was in two halves. It's the West Country and South Wales. We decided we were going to call that Galaxy and make that a kind of a dance music station. And so they became linked to the station in Bristol and the regional station. That was a great radio station. Paul Chartler was the station manager of that. He wrote the application and he got that license, and he got it going just fine, just brilliantly. The thing about Galaxy was, when we launched, we couldn't launch in Bristol, we couldn't launch in South Wales. We had to launch in the Bristol Channel. Now, to do that, we had to hire a ship, a cruise liner, came in, and we had our launch party and meal, dignitaries from South Wales and from West Country, all there on this ship. We had a very good time. Now, once again, the whole of the PR, the promotion of the thing was left to Penny Holton and her team, all in a little 4x4 cars, brightly logoed and so on. So she got the cruise liner, sailed it into Bristol. Everybody came over from South Wales or West Country, had a great meal, great party, and it was on the Bristol Channel. When we launched Chiltern Radio, we decided that we would make it a public company so that people could buy shares in it, so it could be owned by the locality. Now, of course, it was a public company, but not quoted. Then eventually it became a quoted company, and that meant that we were a public company, we were on the stock exchange, and we were vulnerable to takeover bids. And, of course, the industry at that time was a bit hot by people who were coming up with great schemes of taking over other radio stations. We had, what, 15 radio stations, I think? Counted them up lately. But suddenly this was a very, very attractive thing. And in 94, I felt that very little protecting us. At the board meeting, we discussed this time and time again. How could we protect ourselves? We had some pretty major shareholders who might not be particularly friendly. They could be hostile. And they were 20% types. And it wouldn't take too many of those. We could be easy prey on a takeover. We were then looking for a white knight, if you like. Not that we were under threat, but we figured if we carry on as we are, we will end up in somebody's grip. But on the other hand, we can perhaps get another station, a larger station maybe, involved with us, and they would use us as their propellant to move us on into the future of broadcasting. Now, that white knight was, in fact, CLT, which is Radio Luxembourg. And in 94, it did launch a bid for Chilton. Of course, we were willing for it to happen because CLT had said, hey, you will be our people in the United Kingdom, and you got the whole power of the Luxembourg Empire. So there was lots of attraction in that. However, our shareholders, namely Capital Radio, the Daily Mail, well, I think we first became aware of it when GWR went out in the marketplace and bought 2.5% of shares. Well, what could it do with that? Nothing much, but it's 2.5% of shares. However, Capital Radio was a 20% shareholder, and the Daily Mail, at the time of that bid, went out and bought more shares. So it owned 29% of Chilton Radio, and or the Chilton Radio Network. Anyway, the CLT bid failed. Why? Because Capital Radio, Daily Mail, and EMAS, they had a little extra shareholder vehicle, and GWR between them, owned damn near a majority of the shares in Chilton. So we could see that there was a problem now beginning to brew on the horizon. And that something came up in 1995 when GWR made a bid for us. It wasn't a foregone conclusion because they were already at their limit in radio stations. They couldn't have any more radio stations. I think the limit of radio stations that you could own at that time was 20 radio stations. So even if they were successful in taking over a part of the Chilton Radio Network, they couldn't take the radio stations because they were already up to the limit. But then, within 3 days, there was an announcement made in that June by the government that they were going to introduce secondary legislation before the summer recess. It was a media bill for newspapers, television and radio. But this particular bill, which was going to be passed before the summer recess, was only dealing with local radio, and they were going to enable radio stations to move from 20 radio stations to a maximum of 35. So now you could see where GWR was coming from. They launched their bid 3 days after that announcement. So the name of the game for me then, as a managing director, was to spend all my time in Parliament trying to persuade the government to turn down this government and to put it into the proper media bill, which is coming up in September 95. And it went down to the wire. It went down to the very last day. The government had it turned down in the House of Lords. It was they were passing the legislation through a committee in the House of Commons. I think it got through probably in the end, but the principal legislation was turned down. Even the chairman voted against it. Then, on the 28th of July, which was the very last day, Parliament was breaking up then for the summer recess, the government passed the bill without debate at 11 o'clock at night time. If a bill is presented in the House after 11 o'clock, there's no debate. And there are a lot of people talking on behalf of Chilton and the Chilton Network, but no matter, it just got passed. They'd prepared their bid in a very clever way over a long period of time, and they'd obviously got somewhere along the line political clout. They had some pretty powerful allies, So suddenly GWR now had its headroom, and their takeover bid was probably going to succeed. In the end, the takeover panel didn't find Forrest, because there was lots of reasons why people wanted that bid to fail. But the thing about GWR was that they were radio stations in competition with us in all sorts of areas anyway. But we were two very separate companies. We were competing. Obviously, I wanted mine to survive. Well, I guess I was running a public company, so I guess I knew that was going to happen one day anyway. I think if you were running a radio station, and it is a public company, you're never going to have a quiet life. That's for sure. And those are the rules of the game. I think the curse of it all was, having got the Chiltern network to the right size, there were plenty for us to get on with and enjoy running. So you take it on the chin. But, yeah, the last job I did on the... that was the House of Commons. So I went back to the radio station the next day. And I then drove around every radio station in the network just to talk to everybody and thank them for what they'd done for me, for the radio station, for themselves. We'd made Chiltern, the Chiltern Radio Network, a great network. But there we go. There was going to be a takeover. It was going to happen that very day, or the next day. So on the last day, I then left. And I was very proud of what we'd achieved. Very proud. But now other people are going to take it on. Yeah. Anyway, I had other things to do. So, I didn't know I had other things to do, but I did have other things. I've been a member of the army Cheshire Royal Army member for years. To be honest, I can't tell you very much about it all, as you'd expect. But there was one operation, and I talk about that. For instance, there was this was during Chiltern Radio days, by the way, Kosovo. They decided to establish a radio station in Kosovo to talk to the whole area and try to pacify it. So we did. We established a radio station in brigade headquarters or whatever in Pristina. We had radio equipment mounted in vehicles. By the way, because Galaxy had only just recently gone on the air, I was very up here with the promotion of it, I decided to call the radio station in Pristina Galaxia. Why? Because Galaxia is the same spelling, the same word in Serb and in Albanian. Those are the principal opponents, remember? That was the war between the two. Galaxia was a name which both would react to. But it was in Serb and Albanian, and played popular music, and we had news broadcasts and so on. But I think that was a great success. But of course, once again, you're there on an army tour of duty, so you're only going to be there for 2 or 3 months, or 3 months or whatever. And somebody else is going to take over. Obviously, I'm out of radio. That ended for me at the end of July 1995. What was I going to do? I don't know. If you're a public company and you're sold on the stock exchange, then you're not scrabbling around looking for pennies. You've sold the company, so you get the rewards of that, don't you? I'm now spending a bit more time with the army. Yeah, and I really switched off. Alderney's Key FM. By the way, my wife and I bought a holiday home in Alderney in the Channel Islands. And this is the early 2000s. But there's no radio station on Alderney whatsoever. And I thought, well, what are we doing here? We need to establish a radio station. So I got some like-minded people. And we established a radio station there, which operated part-time basis, a month in the summer, a couple of weeks at Christmas or whatever. It was called Key FM, as in the harbour. But it was greatly loved by the population of Alderney. It's a very small island, but there's no other radio station on it. They have to listen to Guernsey or Jersey. Eventually, we turned that 5 years ago into a community radio station proper. It's done its first 5 years, and it's now doing its second. And I sit on the board of that radio station, but it's going great guns. But of course, it hasn't got the cut and thrust of ILR. Of commercial radio.
Welcome to the KFM Weather Centre. Here is the forecast for Alderney for the remainder of the day, overnight and into the morning. The wind is westerly.
Well, I think I was a pretty good guy. I'm very proud of the Chiltern Radio Network, that's for sure. But then I'm equally proud of having worked in America. I'm equally proud of having worked for the BBC. I know that really all my deep skills about broadcasting, debates, interviews and serious programming all comes from the BBC. Now, I owe them that debt. They trained me up. Very proud of that. And of course, what I've been doing with the Army. I think the industry is missing a great deal because everybody wants to be a national station. We're going to call it hit radio, double hit radio, treble hit radio. But if I was getting involved with radio again, I would only want to run a local radio station. And I try to make it profitable so that you could run a profit. But that's it. You want to make a station interesting. A radio station has a being, it has a presence. It belongs somewhere. Chiltern Radio belongs in the Chilterns. People who tune to it can hear the news, the weather forecast, and what is happening to that area. You can be proud of it. You can be a listener living in Hemel Hempstead, and you can be proud of it. Whereas I think if you're dealing with these network stations, by the way, yeah, Radio 2, of course, is a network station, but Radio 2 is BBC, has been long established as such. But all the other stations claim to be networked. They're not. They just pumped up former local radio stations who buy time on extra DAB channels. But it's boring. Boring. Nothing to talk about. Listen, we had a great time. We were using public frequencies through licenses issued by the Radio Authority or whatever. And I think we did the best by them. I think we have a great legacy with people now who still remember us, and I'm waiting to see it all resurface again, because it will come again. We're now into this kind of network mode, but it's all boring. They have nothing to talk about. The jingles have nothing to sing about, and so it will come again.
Really, there is something for everyone. We hope to provide an extremely valuable service here. We take this commitment extremely seriously.
This is Showbiz. Be an entertainer.
Colin Mason. For more in this series, follow the Radio Moments Conversations podcast. I'm David Lloyd, and if you do enjoy reminiscing, then do grab my book. It's called Radio Moments, looking back very personally at the last 50 years in radio with a lot of candid observations about life inside commercial radio. That book's called Radio Moments, available on Amazon in paperback or ebook.